All instructions preceding the interrupt causing instruction are committed and therefore have modified the processor state. All the instructions succeeding the interrupt causing instruction are removed and therefore have not influenced the processor state. And depending on the interrupt causing instruction, the instruction itself is either committed or removed, depending if it's a fatal instruction or something which can be handled. So in fact, we call an interrupt on a superscalar processor precise if all the previous instructions have been committed and all the instructions after are discarded, so that the state is absolutely identical to a sequential processing unit, so a potential sequential processor. This is what we call a precise interrupt. And if we support precise interrupts on a superscalar processor, we must as well mark instructions which might be dependent on interrupts. And this brings me to the last part of this pipeline, which is part of the tyrant, and this is the reorder buffer. And the reorder buffer just stores the sequential order of the issued instructions and therefore allows the serialization of the result according to the original program sequence. So this is the idea of the reorder buffer. And usually the reorder bandwidth is equal to the issue bandwidth, which means if I can issue 5 instructions in parallel, I can put 5 instructions right in parallel to the reorder buffer. So there are 2 possible reorder buffers organizations. One is that the reorder buffer just contains the instruction state, meaning the instruction is issued, the instruction is completed, the instruction is depending on a speculation, the instruction is depending on an interrupt. Or we can have the states and the result, meaning combining the reorder buffer and the rename buffer register. This is sometimes in some processes this is combined, that I have the rename buffer registers in the same unit as a reorder buffer. There are other techniques which can be used, which are checkpoint repair or history buffer, for instance. So the reorder buffer is a pessimistic technique where I keep instructions from being committed really unless everything speculative has been corrected and has been confirmed, while checkpoint repair or history buffer are some kind of optimistic techniques, assuming that everything will go right, and if something goes wrong, then I have my history file and unroll everything according to a history file. So it's optimistic and pessimistic point of view. I just want to shortly show you the organization of the history buffer, of the reorder buffer, sorry. So usually I can organize my reorder buffer as a ring buffer. And the size of the reorder buffer is the maximum size of the instructions which can be executed in parallel on the processor. So the maximum number of instructions can be issued in parallel is the maximum size of my reorder buffer. And it's a ring buffer, and it has a head pointer and a tail pointer. So the head points and here the instructions are stored in the original sequence, meaning currently 6 instructions are in the instruction window in different states of issue and dispatch. And the original sequence was I1, I2, I3, I4, I5, I6. So here in the reorder buffer, the instructions are just stored in the sequence that were fetched from the main memory. And if now a new instruction would come in, then the instruction would be then, for instance, I7, and the tail would be moved here. Okay, so in this reorder buffer, I can clearly read the correct sequence of the instructions. And now for each instruction has a state, and this state here is marked by a color, which means green means the instruction has been issued from the instruction window to the execution unit, and the result is completed, so the result is available. Red means the instruction is issued, the result is completed, but the instruction is based on the speculation. Let's call it yellow, means the instruction is issued, but the result is not yet completed. And white means it's an empty slot. And now what I can do is that I can complete and commit, consecutive completed instructions from the beginning here, which are not dependent on a speculation. So in this case, I could commit the first 2 instructions because these 2 are completed. They do not longer depend on the speculation, so I can commit these 2 instructions. I cannot commit I5 because I3 and I4 is not committed yet. So I have to wait with I5. I have to wait until these are green or this has been removed because misspeculation. So removed from the one possibility to remove it from the reorder buffer, or if the packet becomes green, so it means the result is complete and the speculation has turned out to be true. And I have to wait until I4 is completed. And then I can just assume this. I commit these two, so they are out, meaning the head goes here. Then after some time, this speculation turned out to be OK, so this gets green. After another while, this operation gets completed, so this gets green as well. In that case, then I could commit these three. And by using this, at the end, I restore my sequential program order as from the beginning. And this is really the basic trick of a superscalar processor. From the outside, it looks sequential. So the program which goes into the processor from the fetch unit is sequential, and the outcome is again sequential. But internally, parallel out-of-order processing. And you see, it takes some considerable overhead to maintain the sequential order. And the question is, why having this? Why serialization during commitment? So it's just done to keep the convention von Neumann principle on the actual on the architectural level. And out-of-order commitment is not allowed on today's processors. There is one single exception on some processors, allow to bring load instructions before store instructions on some processors. Some processors allow this, to have load instruction be committed out of order, but only a few one. So from the outside, a superscalar processor looks like a simple von Neumann computer. And this is the main reason, this is very good for program verification. So you don't need to need new techniques for program verification. You can use all the techniques for program verification you've learned for your von Neumann machine as well on a superscalar processor. But of course, it's bad for parallel processing because it delays. You've seen in the previous example, I5, the result is much earlier than it's committed at the end. So in fact, you could build a more powerful processor by discarding this. Yeah? Usually you need the number of slots are the number of instructions, of the number of instructions which can fit the instruction window. It cannot be more than necessary for the instruction window, because here are all instructions issued, and in the worst case, all instructions from the instruction window are issued, and then all the execution units are occupied. In fact, you don't need even more than execution units, because there cannot be more than execution units. So it depends a bit on the structure. If you have this reservation station concept, when issuing instructions, in fact, you do not need more than execution units. That's the maximum. You cannot have more entries here than you have execution units. So it's in fact limited, this reorder buffer. Okay, so this gave us a quite detailed look at the superscalar pipeline from its beginning to the end. And it's quite perfect prime time. The lecture is finished, because on the next lecture, then we will start with a very long instruction word. It's another possible technique of using concurrency, spatial parallelism. And it has significant differences to superscalar, which, like in most cases, it brings advantages and disadvantages. And we will discuss this the next lecture. Okay, that's for today. Thank you.